Hello, friends, and good afternoon, good morning, or good evening, depending upon where you are on the planet. This is the Out of This World radio show with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomenon, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We are the fastest-growing spiritual and UFO program in the world with listeners in over 60 countries, and I've been told also that we have a lot of listeners off-planet from the Galactic Alliance, so welcome everyone to the program. The purpose of the program is to raise consciousness and to make this planet a much better and happier place, and today's interview, I think, will really help in that to that end. We have an incredible show lined up today. We have for our first hour William Arndt. He's a wonderful Hollywood director, of course, who made the incredible film What the Bleep Do We Know and Down the Rabbit Hole. We'll be talking to him in just a few minutes from the Los Angeles area. And then during the second hour, we will have some wonderful, fabulous people, a trio of people from the Emoto Peace Project coming to us live by Skype from Tokyo, Japan, including Hiro Emoto, the son of the late wonderful Dr. Masaru Emoto, who passed away last October, as well as his chief scientist, Dr. Yasu Nimoto, and the wonderful and always very, very talented Michiko Hayashi, the director of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo. The Dr. Emoto was featured in Mr. Arndt's wonderful movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? So the two programs really do tie into each other, and this will be an incredible, incredible show today. Before we begin, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including the Inspired Crystal and Spiritual Shop at 765 Broadway in Tacoma, Brady's Oysters in Westport, Washington, and the Tokelan Hotel in Tokelan, Washington, 20 miles south of Aberdeen, Washington, on the beautiful scenic Pacific coast of Washington. If you ever need a break and you'd like to go to the ocean to a wonderful, beautiful old hotel that's about 150 years old, do visit the wonderful Tokelan Hotel. They're located right on the Pacific Ocean on beautiful Willoughby Harbor, and their phone number is 360-267-7006. With that, I'd like to play just a few promos for our wonderful sponsors, both Inspired Crystal and Spiritual Shop in Tacoma and Brady's Oysters in Westport for wonderful seafood. And then we'll be back on air with our wonderful guest, Hollywood director William Arndt. Please stand by. Hello, friends. I'd like to introduce a wonderful friend of mine, Juliana, who's got a wonderful new shop in downtown Tacoma at 7765 Broadway called Inspired. Juliana, please tell my listeners all about your wonderful shop.
Hi, Ted. It's a pleasure to be there. We have a wonderful shop on Cheek Row in the historic theater district of downtown Tacoma. We specialize in beautiful crystal jewelry, gifts, tarot cards, artwork, and a lot of other things. A lot of our items are handmade and very special, and we buy from all over the world. Folks can schedule a reading, sign up for one of our engaging classes, or enjoy one of our exciting events. We do a lot of community events, and we offer a lot of unique and unusual workshops here. We're located in Antique Row in a historic theater district of downtown Tacoma. We're easily accessible from the freeway, and there's lots of parking in the area. Is super easy to get to. We're placed among the unique stores in Antique Row, and folks can come down and have a wonderful afternoon shopping in the area and having a wonderful meal at a local cafe as well. So we're located at 765 Broadway in Tacoma. All folks can come and visit us on our website, inspirednewage.com. We're open Tuesday through Friday, 11 to 5:30, and Saturdays, 11 to 6. And be inspired. That is definitely our logo, and we certainly follow that. We dedicate ourselves to creating an uplifting experience from the moment folks walk in and hopefully throughout all of their subsequent visits.
Wonderful, Juliana. And I want to tell people it's very easy to get there. I visited their shop here a few days ago. If you're coming from the north, from Seattle, you simply take the city center exit.
Yeah, you take the A Street exit, and you go left on 9th Avenue, and then you go right on Broadway.
Okay.
And it's super easy to find. We're just a couple of doors down from that corner.
Okay, Juliana. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wonderful gift shop. I've been there, friends, and it's a wonderful place, and I urge all my listeners to please visit Juliana's shop.
Thank you so much, Ted.
Hello, friends. I'd love to tell you about a wonderful seafood place on the Washington coast. It's called Brady's Oysters. They're located on Highway 105, about 15 miles west of Aberdeen, Washington, in Westport. If you ever go out to the coast and you'd love some seafood, please stop by Brady's Oysters. They have wonderful seafood, including crabs, oysters, clams, salmon, halibut, steelhead, you name it. They've got it. And their prices are extremely reasonable. Their phone number, if you want to give them a call, is 360-268-0077. I've been there myself, and their seafood is great.
Lewis and Clark would be proud. We're exploring new territory on the air every day right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hello, friends, and welcome back. Before we begin, I just wanted to tell you all that I'll be in the Portland, Oregon area on Sunday giving a wonderful presentation on the Emoto Peace Project at the New Renaissance Bookstore from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. If you'd like to go, please go. I'd love to meet you. The address for the New Renaissance Bookstore is 1338 Northwest 23rd Avenue in Portland, and their phone number for tickets or information is 503-224-4929. Also, this program is supported entirely by donations, and for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. Any support will be really appreciated. Also, if you have any suggestions for programming our new guests, please email me or submit your suggestion to my webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com. My email address is outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And with that, I'd love to go to our guest today, William Arntz. William, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, good. Well, good. It's so good to have you today. William, I always like to ask my guests how they got interested in their work. And for those who don't know, before I begin, Mr. Arntz, he's a wonderful film director. He produced both What the Bleep Do We Know and Down the Rabbit Hole. Both films were extremely successful. I think the first film grossed approximately $10 million here back several years ago. But it had a very, very important messages from the film, very, very popular. And I want to go into that today. But William, how did you ever get interested in doing film or doing this kind of movie?
Well, the film thing, when I was a kid growing up, that's what my friends and I did for fun.
Really?
And now, yeah, so this is back in the mid-60s, so that was with my dad's 8mm camera with, you know, no sync sound or anything, and I grew up in a little farm town in Pennsylvania, and there really wasn't much to do, so my friends and I, that's what we did. We made movies and did our little radio shows on a tape recorder, and we just did that. Then through college, we continued making movies, and I always really wanted to make movies, but I was also interested in science, so I ended up going to college and getting a degree in math and physics and engineering, and sort of went off on that path. I always kind of wanted to make movies, and then my friend went to graduate school about 10 years later, and I helped him. The two of us made his master's thesis project. As I was about 30 then, so I was going to go then to L.A. with my calling card and, you know, go make movies, stop being a scientist. And every time I went to L.A., I got depressed and decided that, maybe I'm not going to make movies after all. And then I didn't, and then I just dropped it. For 20 years, until a couple of successful software companies later, I realized I had enough money to make a little documentary. And so What the Bleep started off as a little $50,000 documentary about science, sort of modern science, and how it seems to be somewhat converging with spirituality. And, you know, $6 million later, I had What the Bleep.
Wow.
I got a little carried away.
That's amazing. That's truly amazing. And, you know, I really want to give you a hand, because from the reviews I read, and I've seen the film, William, I mean, when you initially started out, you started out with a lone theater in Yelm, Washington. And
yeah.
You also approached every major film producer here in the United States, and everybody rejected it. But yet you persevered, because you knew it was the right thing to do, and that your film had an important message.
Yeah, that's pretty well sums it up. All the distributors, we had this big showing for the distributors, and afterwards we said, what do you think? And they said, well, we really liked the film. I said, okay, are you interested in distributing? And they said, no one's going to come to a theater and see this.
Hmm.
We said, well, but you liked it. He said, well, we liked it, but they won't like it. No one's going to come to the theater. So that was the end of that. So it was say, okay, well, I guess we'll distribute it ourselves. And then it started off with one little theater in Yelm, Washington. And then we went to the Baghdad Theater, which is in the film, in Portland.
Right.
And they didn't want to show it. The guy just didn't want to do it. But eventually we talked him into doing it. And he said, well, it's not going to do well, but I'll give you one weekend.
One weekend.
I said, okay. And so we got the one weekend, and it was sold out every show. To which he then said, well, I knew it would do well.
Oh, yeah. Then they take credit later for it.
Yeah.
You know, I have to tell you a little story, William. I've had my radio show for about 2 years now, and when I first signed the contract 2 years ago for my program here, I thought to myself, what am I doing? I mean, is this going to be successful? How am I going to get guests? What am I going to talk about? But now my ratings have really skyrocketed. I'm one of the most popular shows in Seattle, talk shows in Seattle, and also, too, I'm the fastest-growing metaphysical radio program in the world with listeners in over 60 countries. So I think the lesson is that if you have a firm conviction that what you're doing is right, you should definitely pursue it, especially if it's a dream that you think would make the planet a better place.
Yeah, and pretty much any time you come up with anything that's fundamentally different or
right.
changing or revolutionary or evolutionary or whatever,
mm-hmm.
the powers that be are basically not going to go for it. I mean, that's just, you look at history for the last 5,000 years, that's pretty much it. So if it's really, as they say, out of the box,
right.
you know, no one's going to go for it. But you just, if you have the sense that people out there really want it, then just got to go find your audience, which is what we've all done.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. Well, the film itself has an interesting mix of different ideas, including quantum physics. Do we consciously create our lives? What's the power of intention? And you come away with some very powerful and profound ideas, including that the whole universe at its most fundamental level is consciousness. In other words, thought creates everything. And the physicality that we have here in the third dimension, as my wonderful foster mother used to tell me, is definitely affected by what we think, especially in the fifth dimension. So it's very important, she always used to tell me, to think good thoughts if you wanted good things to materialize in the third dimension. And that, of course, leads into the wonderful work of Dr. Emoto and the Emoto Peace Project, which we'll be having them on also in the second hour, which will lead, this program will lead right into it. But the film itself, for people who haven't seen the film, William, how would you give a brief summary of the film in 25 words or less? Just joking.
25 words or less. That's the infamous elevator pitch. Have you ever heard that? What's an elevator pitch?
No, I haven't. That's
an expression in New York City when you're doing business in New York.
Uh-huh.
Is the elevator pitch is, you know, you get on at the 10th floor and you're going up to the 30th floor and
uh-huh.
now someone is suddenly on the elevator that you wanted to pitch your idea to.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do it within 20 floors.
Oh,
the elevator pitch. So it has to go fairly quickly.
Oh.
I've never come up with a really good elevator pitch for What the Bleep, because there's a lot of ideas in it. One of the ideas
right.
is the thing you were saying about how we create reality and
right.
the mental, how that impinges upon it.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of go into quantum physics on that and talk, but some of it is just about quantum physics. And some of the stuff about quantum physics is really just for the viewer to kind of shake you up and say, look, what you're perceiving isn't really the way it is. It appears that way to you. That's perception. But it's really different. Like the one thing in the film, the kid's on the basketball court bouncing the basketball,
mm-hmm.
and he says, well, you know, the basketball never touches anything. It
mm-hmm.
never touches, and then we do this little animation because the electrostatic force of the electrons,
mm-hmm.
basically when it gets of the ball, when it gets to the playground surface, it's the electrostatic repulsion of the two
mm-hmm.
that basically stops it and bounces it back. But they
sure.
never actually touch.
Sure.
And so those sort of ideas that kind of says, you know, everyone, it's not really that way. And then you get into the quantum, the weird things about wave-particle duality and things going right. through solid walls. I mean, it's really, really wacky. And so right. part of it is just sort of scientific about the straight-line quantum and how the world is weird. So we have that going on. There's a whole section on the brain and how you can rewire the brain and the neural nets. And because when we were growing up, we were told the brain is hardwired by the time you're 25. You're not making any more brain cells. You're stuck with it. And now they found that's totally wrong. The brain's always making new brain cells. You can rewire it at any time, et cetera, et cetera. So that's mm-hmm. part of the film. And then there's part about emotions and how there's a biochemical basis to emotions and how mm-hmm. they work biochemically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talk about how you can get addicted to emotion just because the same receptors that you use for something, let's say, like heroin, you use the similar receptors for certain emotions. Mm-hmm. So you can get it. So that's another subject of the film. So all this is going on while we have a dramatic story, you know, a regular film story going on with an actress and that whole thing. That's mm-hmm. going on, and part of it's serious, part of it's funny,
mm-hmm.
And there's interviews, so there's talking heads, and there's talking heads, and there's a dramatic thing. So it's really a hodgepodge of a movie that you've probably never seen anything like it, and mm-hmm. that's not the elevator pitch. That's like the subway pitch. That's like from Grand Central down to, you know, down to Wall Street.
Well, we actually have a lot of time left in the hour, so don't feel like you're constrained. That was just a joke for 25 words or less.
Yeah, yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But I think the most important thing to realize from the film, there's many important lessons from the film, William, and I think one of the most important thing people that can walk away with today's interview is that at the most fundamental level, the universe is consciousness. We create basically our reality. And I want to share with you, I know you have the wonderful late Dr. Masaru Emoto in your film, and I wanted to share this little story with you, just a real quick one. I had Dr. Emoto on my Out of This World radio last July 25th, 2014. And for those listeners who'd like to listen to that interview, please go to the show website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just go to past guests for 2014 and then go to July 25th. For Dr. Moto's interview. And we were going over his wonderful work, and I said, Dr. Emoto, would your intention experiments work to create world peace? And he said, most certainly. So I asked him and all my listeners to please send love and light to the Palestinians and the Israelis in the Gaza Strip, because they were all fighting at the time, for a brief ceasefire to exchange the wounded and to give the wounded and those who needed it food and medical attention. So we did that for a few minutes, and the show ended at about 4 p.m. Seattle time. And then I went to the place where I was staying at about 8:30 p.m. and I turned on the television just to see what was going on. I turned on CNN, and guess what had happened? What happened is that the Israelis and the Palestinians had just agreed to spontaneously have a 12-hour ceasefire beginning at 9 p.m. Seattle time to exchange the wounded and to deliver medicals and food supplies, which is exactly what we asked for.
Huh.
And if you think about it, for all the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars spent in the United States and elsewhere around the world on military hardware for so-called peaceful purposes, for so-called defense purposes, and yet all that money, and we could change the world. We could bring peace to the Middle East, to an area where the people have been fighting for months, in a few minutes. And I think that was one of the most profound lessons of that day. And going back to your film, I mean, that's one of the lessons of your film, the wonderful film, is that it teaches people that we do consciously create our lives. And it also you also ask other questions like, what's the power of intention? And that in quantum physics, things are not even things. They're more like possibilities in terms of what can happen in one's life. And but you've done a tremendous job in your film, William, and I'm so happy that you be able to come on today. We can talk about this. Anyway, I wanted to share a few things too as well. Buddha said that we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thought. With our thoughts, we make the world. We create our opportunities, I believe, by asking for them. George Bernard Shaw said that, quote, life isn't about finding yourself. Life's about creating yourself. So if you want to improve your life, if you're out there in the listening audience and you're having difficulties in your life, think about, I think it's useful in view of Mr. Arntz's Williams' wonderful film, and the work of the late Dr. Masaru Emoto, if you want to create a better world, you first think of the things you'd like in your life to improve or change for the better, and then visualize that in your own mind in the fifth dimension, and eventually it should materialize in the third dimension.
You know, I've done since the film came out, I've asked a lot of people about this whole notion that you're talking about creating reality.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I mean, in the film, the first sort of blush of that was, you know, you create your reality, and so what you focus on will happen. And then a few years after the film came out, I was I was having a meeting with Eckhart Tolle.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And I asked Eckhart about that. I said, mm-hmm. Eckhart, what do you think about this whole creating reality thing? He said, well, you do create your, it's true that the mental does create a reality. However, you also have to take into account oneness. You mm-hmm. also have to take into account that we're all connected.
Sure.
So if we're all connected, it's not just my thought creates my reality. My thoughts will affect reality, but you have everyone else's thoughts too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a combination. It's not so clear. Now, certainly by having what you're saying, by focusing on things you want to do, things you want to attract to yourself, I mean, that right. certainly does have an effect. But sometimes people say, well, I have my vision board up. You know, I've done all this stuff. It's still not happening. You know, why isn't it happening?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've done all the five. I bought the books on the seven steps to getting everything you want.
Right.
And I've done all seven, and I don't mm-hmm. get everything I want. So what's the problem? So
mm-hmm.
the thing is that the subject, I mean, it's really a lifetime of study,
sure.
of learning that, because there's,
sure.
I asked, are you familiar with Irvin Laszlo?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I asked Irvin the same question. And he said, well, you know, it's you know, the world is far too complex, and there are too many things going on in the world and the complexity of the world to think that it's a one-to-one that I create my reality. You do create mm-hmm. every, you know, a thought is a real thing. A thought is as real as a billiard ball, or
sure.
some people would say more real.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that because you're focusing on, you know, finding the perfect mate, that it's going to happen, because there's always the unconscious, there's the subconscious. So you may consciously be thinking, I want the perfect mate,
right?
But unconsciously, because you know, had a very horrible family life growing up, you really don't want one.
Mm.
So this mm-hmm. whole thing about, you know, because the unconscious is the thought too.
Sure.
So it's kind of a lifetime of what I've learned since making the film. It's really a lifetime of study where, you know, you are creating, but it's like you have to look at the totality of you
mm-hmm.
that is doing the creating. And there's the shadow parts. There's the parts that you may not be aware of. And there may be an internal battle going on where on the one hand you want to get the perfect job, but part of you doesn't. So that's the part of self-discovery where you go inside, and this is the evolution or enlightenment process, where you go in and you clear out. So if you're trying to manifest something and it's not happening, that should be the, instead of going, oh, it doesn't work,
right?
I shouldn't have bought the book on the seven things to do,
mm-hmm.
that's the point at which, you know, you say, okay, well, then there's something in me limiting that. So now I'm going to do a little excavation, a little archaeological dig on myself, and figure out what that is.
Sure, sure. Well, I know how that is, because when I was a small boy, 5 years old, I was told I was stupid. And it's a true story. And at any rate, I rebelled by getting a whole bunch of degrees, and I've been a lifelong learner ever since. I'll show them. I'm not stupid. So, you know, that's how I rebelled against it. So, but it's true. A lot of people have psychological records in the back of their head, and sometimes those often come from childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and but if you and it's a really good thing to try to examine those either with a friend or maybe through counseling or through meditation to go deep within yourself, because all the answers are, I think, are within.
Yep, you just have to have the wherewithal and the courage to go looking.
Because
sometimes you're digging around in the closets and it's like, ooh, I have this image of myself as the nice guy. I didn't realize that there's a part of me that's just a nasty killer.
Right, huh. right.
But that's the process, the enlightenment process, bringing everything to the light.
Right, exactly. One of the things I think that in healing, when people have diseases, for example, or health problems, I think we all have the capacity to choose to heal. But sometimes I wanted to tell you this quick story. About a month ago, I had a wonderful conference called the Galactic Wisdom Conference in Gig Harbor, Washington, just outside of Tacoma, and there we had a wonderful healer named Jerry Wills. Now, Jerry, believe it or not, did some miracles during that time. He restored the eyesight of one woman who was legally blind. He also restored the walking ability of yet another lady who had been crippled for years. There's so many amazing healing miracles that he did during that conference. And for those of you interested in his interview, I had him on my show here recently at www.outofthisworld1150.com. But he said that we all have the capacity to choose to heal ourselves, but sometimes we have these subconscious old records from our childhood or from whenever, which prevent us from doing so. And sometimes, too, it's a past karmic debt that needs to be paid or rectified. And so we've got these other factors coming into play. And he said that if it's a past karmic debt or if a person's subconscious is preventing them from getting healed, then that needs to be worked on as well as his own techniques.
Yeah, I read an interesting book about my sister has fourth stage breast cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, and so it's we're all with her. I was told this to my doctor, and he said, "Well, I've got a book that you might be interested in." Mm-hmm. And it was a book that was written by this man. I can't remember his name.
Mm-hmm.
He's a doctor in Texas, and he runs a hospice center wing of the hospital. And he started telling stories about all these amazing experiences that would happen of people who were going through the dying process. And they were people who angels would be showing up in the room, and they would tell him things, and it was really, this book, I'll wander through my library, see if I can find it, because
okay.
It's really, I read this book, and it was kind of mind-blowing, the things that would happen, and one of the things that happened that I thought was really interesting is sometimes there were certain patients who were suffering horribly, and they refused any pain medicine. And he said, "Well, why? I can do it." And they said, no. We've been told by these ascended beings that we were given a choice. We can experience the pain, and by doing that, we are purifying part of humanity. And so by doing that, that's what we've chosen to do. And then one of the guys was had been a priest for years, and he said, "Yeah, I did that, and I found that the pain got really bad, and then it flipped,
mm-hmm.
and then it just became very peaceful. Even though my body was in pain, he was going through that because somehow, and the workings of karma or how we're all connected,
right.
Somehow by him going through that, he was purifying humanity." So,
amazing.
There's a lot. Yeah, isn't that amazing? So there's a lot of, the thing about healing, and some people will take on what they were saying in this book is sometimes people will take on a certain disease, and they're doing it as part of their selfless service. There's part of their giving to humanity, by experiencing that. Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted just to say quickly that for those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, on the outskirts of Seattle in the United States, North America. And we have a wonderful interview today with William Arntz, the producer-director of both What the Bleep Do We Know and Down the Rabbit Hole. I want to give you a gift, William, on air. And it's a guest that I had on. I've had her on several times, once about a month ago and then once last year. Her name's Susan Liberty Hall. Have you heard her, by the way? Heard of her?
No.
Okay. Well, I'll give you the information later off air, but... just briefly, she had, it must have been 6-7 years ago, she had both her and her brother at the same time got cancer. She had breast cancer and he also had cancer. I don't think it was breast cancer, but something else. And there was a big difference between them because he was the owner of the LA Lakers, very, very wealthy. He had a life insurance policy that was worth $300,000 or $400,000. It would pay for the finest traditional Western medicine for his cancer. Of course, he got chemotherapy and surgery, and he was dead within 3 months with procedures that later she found out only have a 3% success rate. She was broke, didn't have any money at all, but she did have a couple hundred dollars, and she purchased what's called the Two Feathers healing formula from an American Indian gentleman on the Navajo Reservation. And she was cancer-free within 10 weeks and has been cancer-free since.
Wow.
And I will give you her contact information a little later, but for those interested in reading about Susan Liberty Hall's experience, please go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and click on our guest list and just look for Susan. I think she was on last month. And I want to tell everyone I'm not prescribing any medical treatment for anyone. It's an interesting story, and you're welcome to read it about her own experience, about what she did on her own without the help of any doctors. Her treatment might be able to help your sister as well. I wanted to tell you, too, I know you can't see into the studio here, but while you've been talking, William, this studio has completely lit up in a beautiful, bright, white light. And when that happens, I know angels have stepped in. I'm a psychic myself. I've been in touch with the other side for over 20 years. And whenever they're here, they let me know, and they usually do it through color. And we have, they do it through white light, and we have a tremendous amount of white light in the studio now. It's gotten much visibly much, much brighter since you've been on. So they're all applauding you right now for your wonderful, wonderful work. So
The gang showed up.
Well, they're all here. You have a lot of angels around you, by the way. And I want to tell you too that they're asking me are you planning a book, you said, or are you planning another movie in the future, William?
The book I've started writing. I got married last year for the first time in my life.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I thought, you know, by the time I got to be 60 that if I didn't get married I was home free, but then I met my wife and my future wife, and she soon became my wife. She's also very psychic, and has been talking with angels since she was 5.
Oh, how nice!
I kind of laughed when you said they all showed up. And I said it's the gang. I mean, they're around here a lot.
Is she there, by the way? Would she like to?
No, she. But at some point, you'd love to have her on the show. She's amazing.
I would love to have her on the show sometime.
And she does healing and teaching, but she started writing this book, and it's somewhat the story of her life, but she writes in a magical realism type style.
Mm-hmm.
And I said I would help her get the proposal together, and in the process of working with her on the proposal, I ended up, because I'm very good at structure from making movies and whatnot, kind of structuring the book and helping her, and so now we're co-authoring it. So it's a book. I won't say too much about it because the proposal hasn't hit the publishers yet. When it does, I will let you know.
Okay, wonderful.
But it's really about her journey as a mystic, as someone who perceives the other world, spends a certain amount of time in the other worlds, and how does someone like that go through our world where generally, if you tell people, it's not so bad now, but 20 years ago when I was doing certain spiritual practices, if you told people you meditated, they would look at you like you were Ku Klux Klan.
I know. I think you do.
I think.
I think William. I think things are changing. I firmly believe that Nostradamus was right. Back in the 16th century, that he said actually that by the 2020s and 2030s, humanity would embark upon a wonderful spiritual evolution of 1,000 years of spiritual evolution. And peace, and after which we would become a spacefaring species going throughout the universe, much like on Star Trek. But I think with your work, this my radio program here, and so many, many beautiful light workers around the globe, including everyone at the wonderful Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan, that we're all working very hard to create a far better and far happier planet than the one we have. I don't think there's any reason for us to live in conflict, to have negativity on this planet, to have the wars that we have now, to have the conflicts, because I think that the true basic nature of everyone on this planet is benevolent. I've also been very fortunate to be in touch with the Galactic Alliance off planet, and of course they're an alliance of 435 million planets, comprised of approximately 7 trillion entities. Mostly human, all benevolent. They are anywhere between 50 to 100,000 years ahead of us technologically and 30 to 50,000 years ahead of us spiritually. And they're applauding our efforts now to create a far better and far, far happier planet. The doom and gloom of some people on this planet saying that we're going to have a World War III and horrible times, I don't buy it at all. No, all the indications that I see is that things are improving on this planet. The problem, however, is with a lot of media. They focus on the negativities when, in fact, there's a lot of good things happening here, like your work, like I try to make my program to make this planet a better place. So I think you have, instead of looking at a glass of water half full, it's good to look at it as, instead of half empty, to look at it rather as half full and know that we have a very, very bright future. And you're one of the people on the vanguards of that effort.
Well, what you said there, about most people, I think about that often. Most people that you meet are nice.
Absolutely.
Most people, when you're at the store, if you smile or, you're somewhere and you're kind of confused, someone comes up to you and says, "Can I help?" I mean,
absolutely.
Most people are nice. Most people love their families. And that's one of the things where you scratch your head. You say, well, most people are nice. Why is there so much war and conflict in the world? I mean, that's one of these questions you gotta chew on. But in the end, I think because most people are good people, they want to do the right thing. They want to care for other people. That eventually that should win out. But then there are those in power. That's a whole other shtick.
We don't have time to go into this fully right now, but I am planning a future radio program here very, very soon, within the next couple of weeks, with the amazing and wonderful Scott Lemriel of the Ceres Agenda, who's been in contact, both telepathic and face-to-face contact, with the wonderful entities from the Galactic Alliance, as well as Dr. Michael Sala from Hawaii, who is one of the world's authorities on UFOs. And we will go into this, probably going to be in a couple of weeks. I need to nail down the interview time, but we'll be talking about briefly about the agreement that President Eisenhower signed back in approximately 1954 with a very creepy group of aliens called the Reptilians, who actually feed off negativity. And they've, in exchange for their technology at the time, Eisenhower allowed them to abduct humans. And one of the things that the Reptilians feed off of is negativity. So the more wars we have on this planet, the more anger, the more hatred. They love it. They love all that stuff. But and they've been, according to Scott and Dr. Sala. I don't want to speak for them, but I think according to the writing, it's safe to say that according to them anyway, a lot of the wars and the negative things happening on this planet have actually been engendered by this reptilian race who've been working behind the scenes. But we'll be going on to that for another program. But I do know from my own conversations with the Galactic Alliance, have been in contact with them for about a year now telepathically, that most human planets outside of Earth, the nature of humanity from this planet is benevolent, and most humans and other planets, the very spiritually advanced ones, they live, the average longevity is about 1,000 years. They remember all of their past lives, and they are extremely benevolent. So that's where we came from. We're seeded from that as human beings. We're all seeded from that. And this conflict and negativity on this planet is just a I look at it as a very temporary aberration that's changing rapidly. And you'll see it in the coming years that things will get even better, much, much better than they even are now.
Well, then I guess that begs the question: what happened to humans? How did we take the left turn?
How did we take the left turn? Well, I think there was an experiment done on this planet. Everyone here was brought from somewhere else, and this includes plants and animals too. From what I've been told and know, dolphins and whales came from Sirius B out in the universe. There's a tree called the Madrona tree here in the Pacific Northwest. It's a very interesting tree, William, where for those in the area here, if you look at the tree, the bark peels, but its life cycle it matches the planet Mars. It doesn't match Earth when it has its various life stages and sheds its bark and everything. It corresponds exactly to the seasons of Mars and not to the planet Earth. There's so many examples of that. And what I've been told from my friends in the Galactic Alliance, everything was here brought from somewhere else, and this was truly meant as a paradise at one time. But then evil as an experiment was implemented on this planet as a way for people to spiritually evolve, and unfortunately it hasn't really worked out very well.
yeah, you could say that.
It hasn't worked out the greatest. So,
that is the nature of experiments.
Right, right.
Yeah, that is the nature.
But even for the reptilians, evil as an experiment is ending on this planet. I'm not saying it has ended, but it's ending. It's in the process of ending. And from what I've been told, if you look at Scott Lemriel's wonderful book, The Ceres Agenda, it's written sort of like a novel, but it's not really fiction. I would say it's more nonfiction. But that's the way it's written. But if you read that book and read between the lines, you can see a lot of what's going on in this country and around the world today. But the Galactic Alliance, from what I've been told and communication with them, that evil as an experiment is slowly being ended on this planet, and when the transformation is complete by the time frame that I got was 2038. By 2038, certainly by the 2040, certainly. I think it's going to be sooner than that, but by that time, even the creepy reptilians will be transformed into a benevolent species, because they were at one point a benevolent species, but it's kind of a long story what happened to them. So, the negativity and the garbage that you have to sometimes deal with on this planet will be completely gone, and we will truly have a paradise on Earth. So, our children and children's children and their children's children's children have a wonderful, fantastic, bright future ahead of us, so we're all light workers. I look at everyone in this spiritual endeavor as we're all on the same page, trying to make this a better planet. And I think we've got lots of good times ahead of us.
That's interesting when you think about trying to make working to make the planet a better mm-hmm. place. I mean, just even that. Term 50 years ago that the expression didn't exist.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, think about that. Right. I mean, if you go back 100 years, mm-hmm. The concept wasn't even out there of making the. I mean, you would have people, religious people, who are maybe missionaries,
right?
But that wasn't necessarily. That was about converting heathens and giving them the good word. But this whole notion you're saying about making the planet better and people realizing the sort of global consciousness that, look, we're all on the same rock flying around the sun, right, and we're not going anywhere, so we have to start, you know, dealing with that shift in consciousness to think of it that way is really very, very, you know, within our lifetime.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the amazing things, I've been in touch, oh, this studio's gotten bright. Very, very bright. You should see this place, William. It's very bright in here today. And all the angels are so happy with your work. They're very happy with this program, too. We're doing a lot of, anytime we can educate and uplift humanity and uplift consciousness, they're applauding that. But anyway, there are so many good things in store for humanity, and you just have to keep your eye on the ball. Sure, there's stuff to deal with. There's a lot of negativity, but you kind of have to overlook it because things are improving.
You know, I sometimes, you know, think about that too. The things are improving, and you look at something like how people now relate to animals. You know, in the past, I mean, you know, if you had a dog and, you know, you didn't like the dog, you just shoot the dog. And that would, I mean, 100 years ago, that would be, yeah, that dog's being a pain, you know, just shoot it. You know, no one think twice of it.
Right.
But now, I mean, you can get arrested for that. And the awareness, I mean, there's this great story of Thomas Edison, who was a mixed, you know, he's a great inventor and a bit of a mixed bag. He wanted to prove that DC power was as good as AC, and so of course Tesla came up with alternating current,
right,
and Edison had DC. And the trouble with DC, really, it was dangerous in that, you know, because you had to do it at a fairly high amperage, and you had to have a repeating station every, you know, five blocks in New York, whereas AC you didn't. So the AC really was the way to go, but Edison had all his money stuck in DC, so he wanted to prove to people that AC was as dangerous as DC. So he got this elephant, and this was in New York, and he, you know, hooked the elephant up to AC and electrocuted the elephant.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
Kill him, and the elephant falls over dead, and he goes, look, see, AC's as bad as DC.
Oh, my goodness.
And then you think about that. I mean, if someone did that today...
Oh, they'd be arrested. That's true.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine the uproar? But this was, you know, this was 100 years ago, and so people were like, oh, well, gee, I killed the elephant. Huh. Go figure. Well, I guess AC isn't so good either.
Well,
I mean, but the fact that they're... Look at the difference in just 100 years.
Oh, sure.
About doing something like that. I mean, that really shows that, boy, oh, boy, things have changed.
Well, I want to tell you and all my wonderful listeners that a week from today, I will be having a wonderful pet psychic on named Darcy Pariso. She's here in the Seattle area, and she will be taking your questions. So if you have any questions from your beloved pets, whether they're alive or passed on, she'll be able to put you in touch with them. And she'll be able to tell you, for example, whether your cat really likes his food or her food, whether your dog's getting enough walks, and whether you should take your pet to a pet psychiatrist. Just joking. But anyway, she'll be on the show. But you're right. I think the consciousness has changed for the better regarding pets, because they're all, you know, I've been told before by my spirit friends that pets are part of the circle of love around us, William. And it's my firm belief that love is the most important, powerful force in the universe. And if you can tie into that, you can conquer anything. Love can really conquer anything, in my opinion.
Yep.
Well.
Not much to say to that, except yep.
Well, good. Well, I mentioned this before, but I want to quote this again. This is from Buddha. Quote, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. I've had that happen so many times in my life. I'll give you a quick example. It was a number of years ago, and I needed a typewriter. Didn't have one. I needed to use a typewriter. And so I thought to myself, well, I'll go down, and there was nowhere to really buy a new typewriter. I was in a small town. And so I thought to myself, I'm going to go to a kind of like a thrift store. And I said to myself, I visualized finding a typewriter for a dollar, right? So I walk in, and just as I walked in, William, there was a lady doing, guess what? Putting a typewriter out. And I asked her how much it was, and she said a dollar, and it works great. I've had it ever since.
Wow.
So for those out, the lesson is, for those out there who want gold coins, simply visualize it and you'll find it on the streets. No, I'm being silly, but you can affect your reality, certainly. And the most important thing my foster mother, wonderful foster mother, used to tell me, and she's just popped in now, so says hello to you, and just tells me now that to think positive thoughts, because thoughts are just as real as things. They're thoughts. She used to say that thoughts are things, actually. And so if you can think positive thoughts, then that'll be translated into positive things. And beliefs certainly, I think, can create and do create one's reality.
Yeah, and even, I mean, on a very practical basis, I mean, if you negative thoughts, by negative thoughts, you know, mm-hmm. the negative emotions, jealousy, hatred, mm-hmm. envy, you know, if you're thinking those thoughts all the time, that's the world you're living in.
That's true.
And that's just not, it's not very pleasant. I mean, there's a certain amount of energy to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hate has energy, anger has energy to it. You know, mm-hmm. we know that, and some people, you know, really love that. But, you know, it's just not a very nice world to live in. And so, yeah. you know, you when you say your thoughts create your world,
right?
Really, on a inner psychological basis, your inner life, yeah, your thoughts are always just feeding back. And so mm-hmm. you know how it is, you're in a bad mood, you wake up one morning, you're in a bad mood for whatever reason,
right?
And everything that happens pisses you off,
right?
You
right.
know, the subway, you just missed the subway by 10 seconds.
Yeah,
whereas if you were in a good mood, it would have been like, oh well, da-da, buy just, subway, I'll get the next, you know,
just roll.
So
with it.
it's so obvious and basic that I think we all forget it from time
right,
to time, how
right,
that
right.
that mental state that you walk around in, you're just going to bounce off of everything reflecting that.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to apologize, William. I was going to open up the lines to take some calls, but, you know, this interview with you has been so interesting, and time has just flown by. But I will be taking some calls next hour with the Emoto Peace Project people. But yeah, that's true. It's always important to try to maintain a positive attitude, even when you're not having a very good day. You know, there's always, you know, it goes back to the looking at the glass of water, whether it's half full or half empty. Mm-hmm. The one of the things that the Institute of Noetic Sciences came out with after your film, as I'm sure you're aware, was a wonderful workbook on your film, on
yep.
using the lessons in your What the Bleep Do We Know wonderful movie. And one of the things they said to for people to do is have a gratitude journal, where you write down the things that you can be have gratitude for. And I think that's such a wonderful idea. Before we've got a couple of minutes left, and I want to give you the rest of the time, William, to say whatever you like to wrap up your wonderful interview today. But please stay tuned. We'll be coming on the back in about 5 minutes after 3 o'clock Pacific time with wonderful people from the Emoto Peace Project to talk about their wonderful work. And William, go ahead. We've got about a minute and a half left, and please say, I'd love to have you wrap up your interview.
Well, gee, wrap up my interview.
Mm-hmm. 25 words or less, please.
25 words or less, and I just did 8 of them already. Oh, now I'm up to 16. There's 25. That's it.
Okay.
Well, I don't. How to wrap it all up? Gee.
Well, let me put some words in your mouth.
Go ahead.
I think the most important thing to realize is that our consciousness does create reality. If we're having a crummy day, take some time to smell the coffee or the roses. If you can just step back from whatever situation you're in, and you're confronted with a difficult thing, a difficult issue, try to step back and think, be grateful for the things that you have, and that. that gratitude, the power of love and gratitude, can overcome practically anything and practically any difficult situation. And as Buddha said once, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. So if we want a wonderful, bright, happy world, we want to think good thoughts. And it's really as simple as that. And that's one of the powerful messages of your What the Bleep Do We Know and Down the Rabbit Hole, and why it earned millions and millions and millions of dollars and was so successful when the other movie theaters did not want to air it. But that's the lesson, I think. And William, I want to thank you so much for coming on today, my friend. It's really been fascinating having you on.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been fun chatting. And I guess, you know, bye to everyone out there. Have a good everything.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, William. And we'll be back on the air in just a few minutes. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.